Welcome back to The Breakdown with me, NLW. It's a daily podcast on macro, Bitcoin, and the big picture power shifts remaking our world. What's going on, guys? Today on The Breakdown, we are talking to Kraken CEO Dave Ripley. Before we get into that, however, if you are enjoying The Breakdown, please go subscribe to it, give it a rating, give it a review, or if you want to dive deeper into the conversation, come join us on The Breakers Discord. You can find a link in the show notes or go to bit.ly/breakdownpod. What's going on, guys? Really excited for this conversation today. Dave Ripley is the CEO of Kraken, which is one of, at this point, the longest standing, highest credibility, most deeply connected to the crypto industry exchanges that exists. Kraken has been an innovator from back when they first formed more than a decade ago, all the way up to getting the first bank type license for a crypto exchange. And in this conversation, we talk a lot about how the company thinks about the changing nature of the exchange business, and what they were hoping for and building towards coming off of the last cycle. It's a great conversation, so without further ado. All right, Dave, welcome to The Breakdown. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well. How about yourself?
It's great. It's we're recording on a Friday, some of my favorite times to do these types of conversations. And I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I was just mentioning this, but I love these sort of times in the cycle where we've clearly been through a big change. We're clearly at the beginning of something new, not the end of something old, but it's still really up for grabs, right? Like what the shape and texture of this cycle is going to be really interesting. And so where I wanted to start is, you know, I guess like, where do you see us in this cycle? Is it still early? Is retail here? If not, when do you think they'll show up? You know, when you guys kind of sit and try to assess where we are, you know, what do you think about?
Yeah, well, it is nice to see the markets moving, obviously the price moving, a lot of positivity as well that we see. I mean, clearly there's the ETF event that happened. You know, it's really great to see versus the negative news cycle that we had early part of 23 and obviously late 22 and all, you know, that time period. I mean, look, as far as this will be, well, I started in crypto in 2013 and, you know, that was a bull year, if you will. And so I started and it, you know, jumped into a, you know, we jumped into a bull market, you know, soon thereafter, you know, and so I do spend time looking at the 4-year cycle, the 4-year crypto cycle. We do, you know, at Kraken as well. There's of course been this pattern that, you know, is roughly aligned with the halving schedule. And it's been, you know, you kind of see that peak, that new all-time high 18 months on from the halving roughly. But if you really look closely at the various different cycles, they're not identical with regard to timeline. And, you know, the previous cycle kind of started earlier than the one before it. And, you know, hey, if we're starting a new kind of, you know, bull run here, this would mean we're starting earlier than even the previous one, right? And so we're already kind of revisiting all-time highs now before halving. Whereas if you look back in, you know, 2020, the last time we had a halving, we didn't revisit all-time highs until December, I think it was. So we are starting a bit earlier. This also could mean that, hey, we, you know, finish earlier as well. I mean, and it's not surprising if we really do have these, you know, this 4-year cycle pattern, it's not surprising that people are going to try and jump in front of it as well, particularly given that we have this, you know, kind of positive event with the Bitcoin ETF and so forth. So I think, you know, to the extent we're, you know, hitting off the cycle, yes, it's earlier than we've seen in the past, you know, basically kind of like getting to these levels before the halving. So we'll have to see how it plays out. I do think it, you know, it could mean that, you know, we, given we're starting earlier, it might still be a, you know, 12, 18 month time period that we kind of go through a real positive, you know, market environment. And therefore, you know, hey, it may, you know, may not take all the way until the end of 25 to, you know, to kind of get to that new peak.
Yeah, it's super interesting. One of the points that you just made that is not something I've heard a lot of folks talk about, but I think it's really interesting is the idea that at some point, if humans expect a pattern, they'll try to get out ahead of the pattern, right? That there may be sort of like that type of thing happening, you know, where people are just naturally sort of front running what they expect to happen. And I certainly think that you know, that natural tendency plus the catalyst of the ETF could, you know, go a long way to explaining why things have moved so quickly this time around.
Yeah. I mean, we could certainly go down the rabbit hole of what is, you know, technical analysis and trading, and I would be ahead of my skis if we were to do that. But I mean, to the extent that there is a pattern out there with regard to how a market behaves, it becomes identified by various different individuals, and that basically almost removes the pattern. It removes that existing pattern and potentially creates a new one that individuals, and so there you get into like a lot of complexity of the, you know, technical analysis and, you know, trading and markets and how they behave and so forth. But yeah, to the extent that, you know, there is some repeatable pattern out there, you're going to expect that it can't really last that long, because if that is the case, people are going to jump in front of it.
Today's episode is brought to you by Kraken. For far too long, the whole financial system has been standing still, too slow. Only on for certain hours. Overly designed for some types of people, but not for others. Crypto, at its best, represents progress. It asks the question, what if? It invites people in instead of leaving them out. It's on 24/7, 365, and moves at the speed of real life. Not everyone believes it. We've got our fair share of detractors. But that's the way it always is when you're building something new. Kraken is a crypto company that has been through the highs and lows of the industry, facing forwards towards progress throughout. And now they're inviting us to see what crypto can be. Learn more at kraken.com/thebreakdown. Disclaimer, not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Cryptocurrency services are provided to U.S. and U.S. territory customers by Payward Ventures Inc., PVI, DBA, Kraken. Hello, Breakers. Today's episode is sponsored by Ledger. As another cycle ramps up, it's another chance to think about your Bitcoin custody best practices, and of course, to help all the new folks do the same. Ledger is the global platform for securing Bitcoin and other crypto. Ledger combines both hardware wallets and the Ledger Live app to offer the best way to buy, sell, swap, and stake without sacrificing on security or self-custody. Ledger features cutting-edge technology in the form of a certified secure chip and a proprietary operating system, but also brings ease of use. This makes Ledger a safe and secure way to manage your digital assets without all the stress. Check out the link to the Bitcoin Ledger Nano in the show notes. 5% of all sales of the Bitcoin Ledger Nano go to support Bitcoin development. Thanks once again to Ledger for supporting The Breakdown. Let's talk a little bit about the sort of TradFi interest. Obviously, this is sort of the, you know, one of the biggest differences that's become really real this cycle. I feel like every cycle starts with at least the narrative of, you know, TradFi coming to crypto markets. Yeah. You know, in 2020, we had a very lightweight version of it with sort of, you know, some of the more maverick hedge fund guys starting to talk. And we had the, you know, the narrative of treasury assets, which never really came too much to bear beyond MicroStrategy and temporarily Elon. Obviously, this time there is something different happening with the ETF. How do you guys think about how much it changes things to have this totally different set of buyers involved, or do you think it really is a totally different set of buyers? You know, I think one of the big questions that people are trying to figure out right now is, among these sort of, you know, the billions that have flooded into these ETFs, what does it actually represent? Is it, you know, the same folks just sort of, you know, using this new instrument? Is it sort of the degen set of TradFi? You know, I'm sure this is something that you guys have thought a lot about. So I'm interested in your take on, you know, what these ETFs represent right now and what they may represent sort of more in the future.
Yeah. You know, I think you got an interesting point about the institutions sometimes sitting at the front end of some of these different cycles. I mean, that was certainly the story at the end of 2020. Here, there was a number of these different hedge fund managers, you know, came out making comments, you know, about, you know, crypto and the positive dynamics of it and so forth. And Paul Tudor Jones, just a number of them, right? And that was kind of like fairly early, you know, call it in, you know, late 2020, before we got into the 2021 cycle. My most disliked time here, but you're right again. I mean, I don't know if you remember, like in the 2015 range, there was the whole, it's blockchain, not Bitcoin, kind of like institution financial services, you know, they were out promoting that, you know, the permission chains and so forth, a very like institutional thing. That, of course, rightfully died in due time. And it, you know, of course, came back to came back to Bitcoin. But as far as this cycle, yeah, I mean, I do think we are kind of like seeing that a little bit now. I mean, the reality is the ETF is more than, I mean, it's both. I mean, it's really just both. I mean, I think for individuals, consumer, retail, whatever, I mean, the ETF is just more accessible. It's there. It's in their existing brokerage account. Obviously, it's a really basic, simplistic experience. You can't withdraw the Bitcoin, of course. But yeah, I mean, I think that there is that use case and benefit for individuals. And then for institutions, it's not so much necessarily about that like ease of use, because, you know, at least a decent sized institution, they can go to, you know, companies like Kraken and Anchorage and so forth and kind of get there. But there is some aspect of like, hey, this is, you know, an asset that's traded on the traditional markets. When they do their risk assessments, you know, of, you know, what this is and what they're getting into, you know, some of the more conservative firms are able to just kind of like cruise through those risk assessments more easily. And then also, I mean, it's just a, you know, for some of the institutions as well that were maybe on the fence and they're like, how is this viewed by, you know, regulators? Is this really something we should be paying attention to? And then you have, you know, the existence of the ETF, you have individuals like, you know, Larry Fink at BlackRock out there, you know, talking about the positive aspects of Bitcoin. It just is like for them, a proof point that, hey, we're at a time where this is, you know, something that should be looked at, you know, is being accepted by others. You know, at the end of the day, many of them are, you know, what is it? It's, you know, lemmings, you know, that are kind of following the leader as well. And so, you know, so I think there's an aspect of that is, you know, brought more institutional buying into crypto via the ETF as well. So it's really both.
Makes sense. So this is sort of a related question, although a little bit different, but, you know, so there's this interesting in-between period that we had where, you know, coming off of all of the disasters of 2022, you know, no one who's been in crypto for a long time, you know, you were mentioning you've been here since 2013, I think had any questions that it would come back, right? We understand that, you know, even when things go bad, it comes back. How did you guys sort of as Kraken, as an exchange, think about, you know, how you wanted to position and build for whenever the sort of the next kind of time came? You know, there's sort of this interesting thing about those bear markets where they're more quiet and they're kind of chance for reflection. You know, what were you hoping to do? What are you hoping to do, you know, as this sort of new cycle comes into view?
Yeah, this is a great one. I mean, we kind of bring you into the fold of what the, you know, Kraken plan is, the annual plan for, you know, this previous year and so forth. I mean, we have, you know, look, we organize our plan. We use the you know, OKR structure, objectives and key results. We have, you know, five big ones at the top level for the company. And this previous year, one of them was prepare for the bull, right? Maybe not surprising, but I don't know that would be the case for a lot, you know, for all companies out there, you know, having seen what they saw in 2022 and into the early part of 23. But look, Kraken's been around for, you know, over a decade, and we absolutely are certain that Bitcoin crypto are going to be incredibly successful. Adoption is going to grow. It's going to go up and to the right, even though it's not going to be a straight line. And, you know, 5 years from now, a decade on from now and more, we're only going to see that many more, you know, hundreds of millions and then soon, you know, billions of people that have adopted crypto. And so for us, it's absolutely the long game. And so, you know, look, in a period that is, you know, a challenging year with negative news cycle and yeah, adoption, you know, down and, you know, for us, you know, volumes down, obviously that impacts financials. We still have this objective of like, hey, prepare for the bull. What does that mean? It means a number of different things. It means continuing to invest in like scalability of our systems so that when, you know, volume does come back, we don't go down and are unable to service our clients. I mean, that's clearly problematic for those that have, you know, real assets and money in this space to be able to access that money, be able to trade when they want to, if, you know, markets are moving in a different way. Of course, operationally, that's probably, you know, even more challenging than the scalability of the systems in some ways, because it's, you know, fairly difficult to, you know, scale up an operational process with, you know, for example, our client engagement agents. You know, we have several hundred of them. All of a sudden our, you know, volume of support requests goes 5x. We don't necessarily, you know, turn around and have 5x the people people on the team the next day. But how do we think about that? Like, how quickly can we get to a place where we have 5x the capacity on the team to be able to handle that many more requests? And so those are a lot of things we're doing. That's, of course, a combination of a number of different things, inclusive of automation, inclusive of like how we're able to like add to that team over, you know, a short period of time and so forth. So yeah, I mean, I think it's like, it's frankly very purposeful. And, you know, even during a year that had a number of different challenges, we were, you know, certainly investing for, meaningful growth.
So it sounds like a lot of this is not just about sort of, you know, sitting around making decisions about sort of, you know, positioning and sort of what you want to emphasize. It's literally just taking a breath to get infrastructure and systems up and prepared for, you know, what is always sort of a bigger flow the next time than it was the last time.
That's certainly an aspect of it. I mean, in some ways, those periods are nice to be able to catch your breath, right? Because when the market's moving so fast, you know, we just have an influx of a huge number of new clients. Yeah, I mean, it's all hands on deck, being able, you know, doing what we need to be able to, you know, serve those clients, add new clients to the platform, all those types of things. And so in some ways, it does provide an opportunity, for us to catch our breath, focus on some of these things to, you know, really prepare the business, prepare our platform, operations, all these various different pieces for that next go.
So one of the reasons that I think that preparation can be so important is that there's always unexpected things that come up with new cycles. You know, I think broadly speaking, especially over the last year after BlackRock proposed, ETFs were sort of a when, not an if. But, you know, some other things are maybe, you know, a little less predictable. One of the things that has sort of, you know, emerged as a big driver, at least early in this cycle, is this meme coin explosion. I guess, you know, simple question, what do you make of it? You know, either as Kraken or just as a person observing it, you know, like, is it just crypto degens playing a new game, or is there something more significant and sociological going on underneath here?
It's a good question. And I don't really have the answer to this one. I don't know. I mean, I don't have anything in mind, frankly, that this is like, you know, where I have a vision of like, hey, here's where meme coins go. And it's really, you know, society changing or significant or meaningful and so forth. I mean, much the same as, you know, call it PFPs for NFTs. I mean, I think that was a, you know, like many things, you know, given that there's value attached, you know, during these cycles, they, you know, can get ahead of themselves. But like, that's going to be a use case. You know, PFPs are going to be a use case via, you know, NFTs always, I think. I mean, just the same as there have been collectibles historically, you know, whether it's trading cards and, you know, Beanie Babies or you name it, there's been collectibles throughout history. And I think, you know, digital versions make sense. That doesn't mean it's going to be an enormous part of our economy, if you will. And, you know, it might be that meme coins are, you know, similar in that regard, where, hey, there are reasons why people, you know, are attracted to these things, you know, like you said, possibly it's a social dynamic of, you know, the various different people that own them or what have you. But I don't know that, you know, there's necessarily a vision out there that we are aware of.
So part of the reason that I think it makes sense to have some of those conversations to figure out what the next cycle is going to be like and how you prepare for it is that new cycles always throw new things at us, things that we didn't expect. And right now, I think one of those things sort of is this rise of meme coins. And I'm wondering what your take on this is, you know, just as an observer, you know, even not just as Kraken, you know, is this sort of just crypto degens finding the latest thing to degen around? Is it financial nihilism in action? You know, what's your take on whatever Joe Biden coin or whatever it is?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think we have like a strong thesis where, you know, meme coins, you know, become a huge part of Kratomy. We don't. They have been around for a while. I mean, I think they're interesting. They're fun. They play a role. You know, I think they'll continue to be around. Whether they're like, you know, a big use case of this cycle, I don't know. I mean, it almost might be a little bit surprising if that's the case, unless something more, you know, gets added to them. Because again, they've been around, you know, for some time. I don't know. When was Dogecoin launched? It was, you know, is probably in 13 or 12 or something like that. So it's been around for a while. So yeah, I don't, we don't really have a, you know, perspective that these, you know, hey, this is like, this is the use case of this cycle and it's really going to explode. Of course, you know, interesting things in crypto happen and, you know, anything's possible, but that really isn't our perspective. It's like, hey, they've been around for a while. You know, they're going to continue to, you know, be something that kind of like is fun and interesting and drives, you know, some attention for some people out there. Again, maybe, you know, short of some like new interesting innovation that, you know, kind of happens with meme coins that makes them, you know, that much more interesting to a greater number of people.
It's interesting. One of the things that I think, you know, we always have this sort of discourse where it's tempting to treat things that are just interesting to the crypto community as somehow sort of not relevant or not sort of, you know, a big deal relative to the sort of the rest of the world that might come in. But what's fascinating is that the longer that we exist, the bigger that community is, and the more that it can sustain these like weird pockets of behavior that are completely outside of the norms of anything outside of crypto, but like make perfect weird sense inside crypto. And they're sort of like are big enough markets now to just be their own thing without them needing to jump, you know, like there's enough of these degens now to play these games without ever having to sort of, you know, pull in the black rockers, I guess.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that is what we're talking about in the whole, I mean, frankly, that's, you know, that is the, in a lot of ways, the mission of Kraken. I mean, I think there's just a number of things that you hit on there that are really meaningful, actually. So one is, hey, because we believe in these, you know, incredible benefits for really everyone, society around financial freedom, all of these various different pieces. But one of the things that, you know, happens with adoption is the more people that are already in crypto, have adopted crypto, the more it makes sense to build new innovations on top of these networks, right? Because you have that many more users that are already in the space that are right there and able to, you know, be part of your new use case, whatever that is. And so like the more it makes sense for innovators to build on these, so turns out that, you know, the use cases themselves can bring new people into cryptos. So, you know, not everyone starts with, you know, Bitcoin store of value as, you know, their first use case. I mean, there are some people, for example, this last cycle that, hey, they got into crypto first because of this one interesting NFT, or they got attracted to PFP collections, Bored Apes, or you name it. And some people started in crypto that way, or, you know, someone who's a basketball fan with an NBA Top Shots car, you know, interested in that NFT. And then, you know, and then they kind of grow in their adoption across crypto over time. And so I think this is the flywheel. This is what we see happening and has been happening, and the reason why, you know, we'll be successful and will be something that basically everyone in the world touches, you know, many years from now, you know, 5-10 plus years from now.
I think it's a really salient point that there are so many doors that people walk through to get into the crypto space. They're very rarely the rooms that people stay in, to sort of, you know, belabor the analogy, right? I think even hardcore Bitcoiners sometimes forget that a lot of them, you know, started paying attention because of some crazy 50% price move over a couple of days, you know, and they might have decided to stick around because of, you know, properties that they found that were totally unique to that asset and, you know, more learning they did once they got there. But, you know, all of these doors in are sort of equally legitimate in some ways. And, you know, it's just kind of, you know, what people do when they get in them. And to some extent, it almost becomes the job of the people who are already in the crypto space to make sure that there are good resources for people to move between these different areas, you know, as they start learning or they want to learn.
Oh, you nailed it, man. That is exactly my perspective on this. And like, for me, it's like, cool that there's these different use cases and different doors in, and, you know, that, in different ways that people are able to experience crypto, get into crypto, and so forth. But like, what's really awesome and powerful are you had a number of these different use cases coming online, like e-commerce, email, you know, online media, and they were all stronger because the other use case, email, was there, and you could communicate with, you know, customer support easily. And then online media, you'd view images online, and you could, you know, see what product you were buying. And so they all kind of like reinforced each other from that standpoint. And so we're going to see the same thing, and just starting to see the same thing in crypto. Let's take like two of the big, and, you know, NFTs, which is really a family of use cases, big digital art. So these two use cases are actually better given both of them exist. So let's take that example again, and it's, you know, digital as collateral in a DeFi contract.
Yeah,
and absolutely. Actually gain some type of, like, you know, liquidity, financial value.
Yeah, no, it's you see this already happening now too. I mean, one of the things that's fascinating is, you know, so we're recording this the week that BlackRock just announced their, like, tokenization fund. And it really looks like a crypto style product, even though it's, mm-hmm. you know, for this totally different audience. And, you know, it's just going to start to get weird as, you know, listen, like, in some ways you can see these two very different ends of the pole. ETF maybe represents, you know, the sort of crypto world or the Bitcoin world adapting to TradFi structures. But this new product also looks a lot more like TradFi trying to imitate what's happening for crypto. And, you know, all these assets start to look different in those contexts. To your point, like, things that were toys become collateral. And, you know, it's just a very sort of weird melange that we could be in store for.
Yeah. You know, this is one of the things that I, you know, potentially, you know, have evolved my perspective on over time. You know, when I first got into crypto, Bitcoin, we call it Bitcoin at the time, really, was, you know, it was like decentralization at, you know, above all else, and which is still technically, I do believe is the case today, but, like, it was just like an absolute maximalist on, like, decentralization, censorship resistance, all these various different pieces. And I, you know, again, still true today, but, like, what I didn't really have, you know, I guess, you know, understand the same way I do now is that there is a spectrum here, and that spectrum actually does have some benefits. And so what do we mean by that? Well, you can go up and do something on an L2 with a little bit less security, a little bit less decentralization, but you can do other things with it. And so you effectively have more hybrids. I mean, take a stablecoin. Particularly the centralized backed stablecoins, like, that is, you know, not as censorship resistant, of course, as Bitcoin itself. I mean, no way, right? I mean, you have the centralized entity that holds all the assets. They can, you know, they could freeze in individuals, you know, particular, you know, stable coin. I mean, this is true of most all of them out there, but they're actually still a meaningful use case, and there's actually benefits out there. And so, kind of like the ability to use, you know, crypto networks for their benefits and some of the more, you know, kind of like traditional structures and having this, like, hybrid spectrum, I think actually does make sense. And I mean, ideally everyone understands the trade-offs of, you know, actually holding a stable coin versus Bitcoin, because there are, like, very meaningful trade-offs between those two. But that doesn't mean they can't, you know, both actually provide a reasonable use case for individuals.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think is a journey that a lot of us have experienced, and that the Bitcoin and crypto really pull out of you, is the, you know, for people who will find themselves, call it decentralization and censorship resistant maximalists, right? People who are really attracted to those properties in Bitcoin, but who are also free market maximalists, even though they don't like a lot of the other crypto stuff. These things kind of have to war sometimes, you know, as you watch these things that are sort of, you know, and ultimately, I think a lot of people land similar to where you are, where they can understand, even if it's not what they're there for, they can understand why all these various sort of things that are, you know, kind of perhaps even uncomfortably in the same industry as their thing is in, all have a place and a role, even if it's different than the one that they're most excited about.
I love it. I mean, that is actually an important dynamic of crypto. It's like, yes, like, decentralization, censorship, I mean, these are absolutely incredibly valuable things. But the fact that it's also a free market and it's open innovation, and these are networks where anyone can go and innovate on top of them, is actually important as well. So, like, look, if someone wants to go build a stable coin on top of Bitcoin, that doesn't mean Bitcoin loses its properties for what it is and how awesome it is at, you know, censorship resistance and so forth. I mean, it's open. I mean, that's one of the meaningful things about, you know, being, you know, freedom and having a free market, is that, you know, in these networks that anyone can build on. And so I think that's important, even if what's being built isn't as censorship resistant as that base layer Bitcoin or whatever it is. And that's, you know, that's how it should be. I mean, much the same as the ecosystem is open to launch a new network. And that almost is kind of like, in a way, the check and balance on a particular network. If it becomes too centralized or whatever, hey, then that becomes another opportunity for some other network to launch. And so I think, again, just like that openness, permissionless innovation is fundamental to a fundamental aspect of crypto.
One of the I will say, I don't want to put these words in your mouth, but one of the let's call them antagonists to the open innovationness of crypto has historically, or at least for the last couple of years, been the SEC. And obviously, I assume you can't kind of speak directly about anything that's going on with you guys in the SEC. But I do think that over the last couple of weeks, there seemed to have been a shift in the way that a lot of the world is witnessing them. The sort of the censure and sanctions around DebtBox that came in an 80-page decision from a judge, yeah, and a couple of other things. How are you guys feeling that sort of shifting tone around the SEC and sort of their relationship with the industry as well?
Absolutely. I mean, it has become almost comical where the SEC sits within the industry. They fortunately are on a losing streak. They continue to lose now, and the overreach and stretch here is just quite extreme and mind-boggling. And it's not just people in crypto that are aware of this and know this. There are people across all parts of various different industries that are now becoming aware of this. There are, not just here where there are a number of people in the U.S. government that, Congress and so forth. I was over in Europe not too long ago and, speaking with a number of folks in government, regulators, lawmakers, members of parliament and so forth. And their perspective is honestly not terribly different than someone in the crypto industry, anywhere, in that, the SEC seems to be, just taking a really suboptimal approach that, raises eyebrows, gets the eye roll, again, from people in government, in all various different countries across the world. So I think this is, becoming fairly widespread, the negative perception that they've brought on themselves.
It'd be interesting to see how sort of the rest of this year plays out on that front. I'm not particularly optimistic, but I am optimistic about the sort of the hand being revealed, let's say. Awesome conversation. By way of wrapping up, I'd love to kind of, just ask, as you sort of zoom out across the rest of this cycle, or maybe even just, what's coming up over the course of the rest of 2024, are there any big things, if you could snap your fingers and have it be the case, any things that you really hope for, in terms of, how the crypto industry behaves or, anything like that. I'd love to hear, just hopes and dreams for this new cycle.
Yeah, it's a good question. Obviously we just got done talking about the regulatory dynamic. That's a little bit more applicable to companies like Kraken, but that's certainly one of the things that we hope, moves in the right direction, from where we sit today. Again, that's somewhat of a Kraken lens. I think there's, a broader piece for like crypto generally is, it would really be nice if like all of our learnings from previous cycles were, perfectly understood and applied in this cycle. So when we talk about things like, leverage, who and what individuals are going to trust with their assets and all these various different types of things and the importance of that and the importance of security and all these various different pieces, it would be nice if we were able to, as an industry, as a group, somehow ensure that all of these learnings from past cycles we brought forward. I mean, the buildup of leverage, obviously that's, maybe already happening to some extent. Of course, that's not a crypto thing. That happens in TradFi all over the place, or not crypto unique at least. But yeah, I mean, I think that would be a great thing if we were able to like kind of continue to see, great adoption, but then, remember these challenges that have come about previously and we learned from them.
Yeah, I can co-sign that hope very mightily. Dave, awesome to have you on the show. Really appreciate your perspective on all this stuff and very excited to see what you guys build and come out with this cycle.
Sounds great. Great being here. Thanks so much.